Hello, I'd like to welcome everybody to tonight's addclasses.com free teleseminar. This is Tara McGillicuddy, and I am the founder and director of addclasses.com. And I would like to welcome Bonnie Minku to addclasses.com. Tonight, Bonnie is going to be presenting Overwhelmed, 8 Techniques to Break Through the Paralysis. So welcome, Bonnie, and I'm going to hand everything over to you right now.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, this is a wonderful time to give a class called Overwhelmed because, coincidentally, it's tax week. And a lot of my clients have been overwhelmed doing their taxes, scrambling to get them done before April 15th. So I know that tends to be kind of a rough time for everybody if you're also scrambling to get them done. Good topic for now. Let me give a very brief introduction of myself. I'm a senior certified ADHD coach and the founder of Thrive with ADD, which I started in 2001. And my background is over 23 years of corporate management, consulting, managing training and development, and executive coaching. And I decided one fine day that I wasn't having enough time to paint. And I thought, gee, if I did all this on my own instead of working for a corporation that wanted to keep sending me out of town, I would have more time to paint, which, of course, is kind of funny because when you're starting up a new business, you don't have time to paint. But I didn't know that. So I decided to start this. I found out once I started that I was ADD, found that out quite accidentally by attending a coaching conference and going into a workshop on ADD coaching and, just to my surprise, recognizing myself in the handout on ADD. And so that's the whole direction that my coaching career took off in. But the reason I recognized myself in that handout is I was so puzzled at my own behavior of not getting things done. Because I had to start a business from scratch. I had a lot to do. I had, in those days, it wasn't as technical as it is now. So I had a pretty good handle of what I needed to do, but I wasn't doing it. And I was avoiding my desk and sleeping late. And I had been someone that in corporate they could count on to get things done immediately. But without all that structure, I was kind of paralyzed and falling apart. And I look back on that now and think largely I was just overwhelmed. So I probably would have done better with some structure, but I think I also needed to kind of pull myself back and break out of overwhelm. And I didn't know how to do that at the time. Of course, I've since learned how, I've studied quite a bit on how to coach ADD and work with overwhelm all the time right now. So let's start with talking about overwhelm here. And what does overwhelm really even mean? So if you'll join me in the wonderful state of overwhelm for a moment, we can define it as the mental state that we experience when our brain gets flooded with thoughts and information, and that creates mental paralysis, or at least people with ADD, ADHD, for us especially, it creates mental paralysis. Now, from my point of view, talking to a lot of coaching clients, I hear of overwhelm all the time. So I think it's one of the biggest problems that we experience with ADHD, but it's one of the most overlooked problems. And that's because the feelings of overwhelm that we have aren't visible to other people. And therefore, overwhelm isn't given the recognition that is given to behavioral traits that other people can see, like lateness or disorganization or procrastination or poor follow-through. Other people can see the results of that. But a lot of the visible problems like those among us with ADD are really a result of us being paralyzed by overwhelm. And if you were attracted to take this class right now and I'm listening to me, you're probably one of those people who does get paralyzed by overwhelm. Now, what overwhelm looks like to other people can look like procrastination, lack of motivation, lack of focus, even indifference, so people might think it's a bad attitude, lateness, avoidance, depression, anxiety, so other people may see the look on your face when you're overwhelmed and think you're just suffering from anxiety. It can disguise itself as all of these things, but the bottom line is really what it feels like to you when you're living inside your brain. What it feels like to you is just paralyzing, and it's absolutely painful. And it forms a vicious cycle. So with ADD, the overwhelm is triggered and it's heightened by, well, I came up with words that went along with the word pain, projection, ambiguity, impatience, and negative thoughts. So let's see how it actually works that way. Let's start with projection, the P word. The projection is projecting negative outcomes. You have assumptions about what could or might happen, or how you'll feel, or how you might feel, or you're afraid you're going to feel. And that projection makes you fearful and overwhelmed. And then that leads to avoidance. We also can say that the A is for ambiguity or uncertainty. And that comes about when you're not sure of what needs to be done, or how to start, or where to start. And then again, you start feeling overwhelmed, and you might just stay paralyzed and not start because there's that uncertainty factor there. Now, the I in pain can stand for impatience, because that can actually contribute a lot to overwhelm. Now, as you probably know, those of us with ADD do tend to be impatient easily. When you're impatient, you can't stand the thought of taking time to think things through, especially when you're already feeling there's too much to do and there's no time to do it in. So if you don't take the time to think things through, you just remain stuck in that place and you feel overwhelmed and helpless. And finally, if we look at the N in pain, that can stand for negative self-talk. And that's where the shame talk comes in, and you start remembering all your past failures, and you convince yourself that it's absolutely futile to plan because you're probably going to fail anyway. And this just leads back to that projection of negative outcomes, so it goes around again in a circle. But there is an additional component to this vicious cycle, and that is the component of shame. Not everyone with ADD really suffers heavily from shame, but a lot of us do. And if you are someone who really gets caught up in a whole cycle of shame, then the negative self-talk is much greater, because it's not just negative about what you did or what you fear you may do, but actually about who you are in your essence. And it just brings a flood of negative emotion. And the feelings of shame just contribute to keeping you locked up in the overwhelm. So if you have a tendency to ruminate and dwell on past failures and then you feel ashamed about them, that could keep you from asking for help because you're afraid to let other people know that you don't know what to do or you don't know where to start, or maybe you're afraid that you were already told the direction to go in but you don't remember and you don't want anyone to know that. So rather than simply finding out what you need to do to break out of the overwhelm, you remain overwhelmed and paralyzed once again. And what gets even more difficult to break out of is you might even feel ashamed at being overwhelmed. And especially a lot of times when people aren't quite aware when they're overwhelmed, so instead they're beating themselves up for procrastinating, and you're blaming yourself. And that can lead even more to the shame. So to get out of this very unpleasant, vicious cycle, we need some specific mental techniques for breaking out of the overwhelm. And that's what I would like to show you tonight. And these techniques we can put in the category called mindful self-awareness. But when I talk about mindful or mindfulness here, it's not in the sense that you might often hear that word. I'm thinking about it in a very concrete and very practical sense of deliberately thinking things through. Because when you're feeling overwhelmed, your brain might as well have just been hijacked by emotion. And your ability to think calmly and rationally just disappears. So depending on how you react to it, you might panic, or maybe you're just coming up against a blank wall when you're trying to think and get things done, and all you see is blankness. So in order to take back control of your brain, you want to learn to practice very deliberate mindful techniques or a deliberate way of thinking things through, and that's going to increase your self-awareness. So these kind of techniques involve being very deliberately rational and breaking out of the emotional. So let's start with the first one, and that is to recognize common triggers that bring on overwhelm. And it might be something that you haven't really thought about before. What do these things have in common that tend to bring on overwhelm? So you might think about what's overwhelmed you in the past, and then based on your past experience, identify what particular types of challenges are most overwhelming to you. And there's usually a pattern. Once you start thinking about it, you'll see a certain kind of thing coming up over and over again. If you can't think of anything right now that your overwhelm experiences have in common, you can start tracking this. And maybe just start a tracking diary or keep notes in your phone or however you might want to do this. But it's a good idea to really start paying attention to when you're feeling overwhelmed. What types of things make you feel that way? So some common overwhelm triggers are simply activities that can be very large. And it can fall into just about any category. A lot of work to do, a lot of studying to do, a lot of home repairs to do. Whatever it is, it's going to seem overwhelming if it seems like a lot. So an example, say in a work situation, might be filling out several months of overdue expense reports or months of overdue client invoicing, or for this time of year, maybe categorizing a year's worth of receipts for taxes. That can be very large. Another thing that can trigger overwhelm might be something that's complicated or difficult and that involves a lot of steps. So here an example might be putting together a bicycle that comes with a 10-page instruction manual. As soon as you see the manual, you might start feeling overwhelmed. Things that are ambiguous or unclear about what has to be done or how to start, and I'd mentioned ambiguity before, this is a very common overwhelm trigger. It's very paralyzing. So an example might be trying to figure out somebody else's filing system. And finally, something unpleasant can be overwhelming, and pleasant in the sense that doing the action can make you feel uncomfortable. So if you had to write 96 thank you notes for wedding gifts you received over 6 months ago, then you're embarrassed that it took you so long to write them. That feels uncomfortable, and that can bring on that feeling of overwhelm and make you delay writing them even more. So that would be the first technique to start with, is identifying that pattern of overwhelm triggers. Then the second is to identify the feeling of overwhelm itself as soon as you start to feel it. And that involves paying very conscious attention to your feelings when you find yourself avoiding something. Now, some people are already very in touch with how that feels in their body. So it might be your neck tightens, maybe you feel kind of a stomach ache, or your chest tightening up, or your muscles tightening up, or you get a backache, and, you know, everybody's a little bit different. But a lot of people are able already to know what that feeling is, and other people are not, and you might have to really think it through more. So you might have to actually catch yourself avoiding and then ask yourself, why am I avoiding, or why am I not starting something I know is overdue and I really have to start it, and then identify that it perhaps is overwhelm. But you want to be able to kind of greet overwhelm by name rather than drown in it, because it can feel like quicksand when you get caught up in it. So now you want to know what it feels like, become acquainted with what it feels like to you in your body, and categorize it at that. And then identify why you're feeling that way. Is it because the challenge was large or complicated or ambiguous or unpleasant? So now you're pulling out of the emotion because you're really analyzing what's happening here. Now, the third technique is to schedule a time to think through this overwhelming project on paper. If it's a big project, you probably really do need to do it on paper or in writing or online, as the case may be, if you prefer using electronics. But you really would want to break it out and make this big, amorphous, overwhelming thing something that's down to manageable proportions and maybe a bunch of much smaller, non-overwhelming steps. The trick here, though, is to really make an appointment with yourself to do it. Don't just think, I really should plan this out, you know, and then go on to something else. When you find yourself saying, I really should plan this out, pick up your calendar or your planner and decide when and where you're going to do this planning, and treat it like any other appointment. Treat it seriously and put it there in your calendar. And the reason why it's so important to identify in advance what will make you overwhelmed is so you can plan for it, because you don't want to be that deer in the headlights, get caught by surprise, and then suddenly you're drowning in the overwhelm. So if you start anticipating that and then give yourself reminders or, you know, whatever you're using for a calendar system, there it is, and you know you'll break it down. Now, a lot of people me certainly included, if I have to break down something large and unwieldy, I don't do it real well at home. I go to Starbucks and do it. Everyone's different on that one as well. But it might be, if this is something you're not accustomed to doing or you tend to resist doing, that a different environment that you find more pleasant would actually help you do it. So what you're going to be doing is breaking down a large project into small steps, and I'm sure you've all heard that one before, but I want to show you some visual tools for how you can do that more easily. Now, tools that I have found are really very effective are the mind map and one that I don't talk about as often called the decision tree. So a mind map is a technique where you put down on paper or by software, as the case may be, but I like to teach it by paper because that's really easy. A mind map is a diagram of all the steps that need to be done, but it follows the way your mind thinks about them instead of forcing your mind into a structure like an outline, which is usually a lot harder for people that are creative thinkers. So let's look at what a mind map might look like. And I know on the slides this might be hard to see. Incidentally, if you want to see what a mind map looks like, if you haven't been exposed to those, just go over to Google and look at images and type in mind map, and you'll see all kinds of crazy pictures of creative mind maps people have drawn. But I do a pretty simple model, which is simply the thing that you're going to mind map, let's say the name of the project, you write it in the center and put a little circle around it. So in this case, the project is decluttering your house. And that's what's in the center. And each of the rooms of the house in this very large project are delineated by lines coming out of the center. So you'll see the one on going off to the right is called dining room. And you'll see one coming out of the bottom. The one coming directly out of the center is the master bedroom. And so those are the primary lines coming out of the center. Now each one of those can be its own mini project. So if we will stick with the simplest one, the dining room, there are two lines coming out of the dining room. One says table and one says sideboard. These are two separate sections of the dining room. Because imagine if your dining room is really cluttered, you've got to divide it up somehow or else just the dining room would be overwhelming. So we've got the table and the sideboard. Now if you wanted to further subdivide it, the sideboard has a top, and it has drawers or cabinets in the sideboard. So you've got lines coming off of sideboard that say, you know, empty the cabinets, clear the top. And even emptying the cabinets, each of the cabinets may have drawers within them or shelves. So you can break it down really pretty fine. Now, how fine you want to break it down is up to you. But you want to get it to the point where you can look at a particular step and choose when you're going to do a particular step, and it will not be overwhelming. So if I were to look at this and see that the step that I've scheduled for today is simply to clear the top of the sideboard, that's not overwhelming. I may not enjoy it, so maybe I'll put on some fast music and make it a little more fun, but it's not overwhelming. Whereas thinking of clearing my entire house is huge. I would just want to go and pull the covers over my head to think about that. So that's how mind mapping breaks things down. So I might be trying to think through the steps that take place in the dining room, and for some reason my brain will then suddenly leap to the basement, and I think of something in the basement. Well, then I just start a new line coming out of the center, and I label it basement, and I write down whatever my thoughts were for what I'm going to clear out in the basement. You don't have to follow any certain order. That's where I say it's a mind map. You can roam, you can let your mind roam around as it will, and you simply follow it with your pen and write in what your mind is thinking in a logical way. And there is mind mapping software, so that's another thing you can Google and look it up. I think one of them is called MindMeister or something. And there is free mind mapping software. But the point of mind mapping, I think, is to be able to do it very quickly and spontaneously wherever you are. So, unless it's a really serious project that you want to lay out and have permanent documents of it, just paper and pencil works fine. So that's an example of what you can do to mind map to break down an overwhelming project. And now let's look at a decision tree diagram. Now this is actually something that they teach in business school, but we can use it for the layman for very basic and simple things, or to help with basic decisions of life that aren't so simple, that can have a lot of consequences and be really important. Now, you would do a decision tree diagram when the decisions that you need to make depend on what happened at certain junctures, and you're not going to know yet what will happen at certain junctures. So let's say that we'll take a big decision here. You need money. You've got difficult financial circumstances. So you decide you've got to put the house on the market to downsize your personal circumstances. You want to put the house on the market. You don't know if the house will sell in a certain length of time or it won't sell. I think I probably came up with this one in 2008 when a lot of houses were not selling. But let's say you have one line coming out of putting your house on the market, which you've kind of put a circle or a square around and labeled that phrase. One line coming out of it says the house sells, and the other line coming out of it says the house does not sell. And I've, in the diagram, put little circles as to where you need to make a decision. So if the house sells, you've got to make a decision based on, well, the house might sell at a profit or the house might sell at a loss. If the house sells at a profit, there's another decision. You can buy a cheaper house with the profit money. And there are probably a number of other options you can do as well that you would lay out. If the house sells at a loss, you can cash in the bonds to pay back the bank. Let's say you owe money to the bank on the mortgage. You can rent an apartment as another way to live more cheaply. But you're not going to know what you need to do until this thing actually happens, until you find out what you can sell the house for. Now, let's say the house does not sell, and you have to pay back a lot of money. There, if the house does not sell, you have another decision. You can either lower the price, keep on lowering it until it sells, or you can find a way to invest in repairs if the house is in bad shape, and that's why it's not selling. So this is what the kind of thing you would use if you have a lot of decisions to make and it's not clear what the circumstances are going to be. It allows you to write out the decision based on each type of circumstance. If you don't do that, you can stay just stuck in ambiguity and therefore overwhelm. But this little tree guides your actions depending on this or that. So you don't want to just stay stuck and say, well, I don't know what to do. It depends, because this allows you to write out what you would do in each situation. All right, technique number 5, pick a starting point. Because a lot of times when you're overwhelmed, it's because you don't know where to start. So how do you pick a starting point if you don't know where to start? Well, if you really can't figure out where to start, you can just pick any place. It kind of doesn't matter, because any place you pick is better than not starting at all. But instead of just jumping in, you pick any place and then you visualize that in your mind. Picture yourself starting at that place. If you're not able to, because you realize in this picture in your mind that there's something else that has to be done first, then that's good information. Then move backwards. Then picture yourself starting at that new place and see if it's possible. Again, if something else has to get done first, you move backwards. So you keep visualizing this until you don't have to move backwards anymore, until it's okay to start there because nothing else had to be done first. And so that can pull you out of that paralysis. So it's sort of like, in a way, starting like, with the kids' game where you close your eyes and you pin the tail on the donkey. That's how you can pick a place to start and then just decide if that actually worked out well. I'm always remembering the instance where this worked with someone who actually did need to declutter almost her whole house, but starting with one closet that was really a problem, and she was just dying to get into that closet and start clearing it, but she wasn't doing it. And I finally said, well, if you picture yourself opening the door of the closet, what are you confronted with? And she said, I can't open the door of the closet. That's the problem. There's a huge, heavy box full of stuff that's blocking the door of the closet. So that was an example of when she consciously visualized, she realized what had to be done first. She had to deal with the box full of stuff. And I think then, she didn't know what to do with the box full of stuff because there wasn't anywhere to put the stuff. So it was a little more complicated, but eventually she could find a starting point when she visualized that way. Now, there's an exception to this continuing to work backwards mentally, and that is if any part of your project involves other people. Anything involving other people make it a little bit more unpredictable. If you need something from someone, if there's a stage of this that they're involved in, if you need their permission, if you need to ask them questions about it, anything at all, in that case, you really should give the other party a heads up as soon as possible. So maybe the stage that involves them isn't one that's ready yet, but at least communicate with them and maybe ask them if they'll be available at that time when that stage will come up for them. Because that's the worst kind of surprise. If you're moving along, maybe you're close to deadline, you're kind of stressed, and now you hit the stage where somebody else has to read what you've written and approve it, and that person that has to do that is on vacation for a week, that would not be good. You would want to know about that in advance, because that might really affect your timetable. Number six is maintain focus on very small, specific steps one at a time, so that you keep in the present. You've hopefully planned out, if it's a very large project, you've planned out how you're going to go about it, so you don't have to keep thinking of the future. Remember the first P in that pain anagram that I gave was projecting. Don't project fearful thoughts on the future. If you've got it laid out, you'll be able to stick to your plan if you stay with the present, or at least stay with it at least as much as in your control if you stick with the present. So there's no need to keep dwelling on what could happen and what could go wrong and what the future is going to be. Now, that's a little bit different than not paying attention to what you're learning along the way. So if you're sticking in the present, but you're finding that things are taking a lot longer than you thought they would, then you probably do need to readjust your future steps to take that into account. You may have to readjust your timetable. But that's a little bit different than just ruminating and worrying about it. At least you're working through it. And that leads to seven, which is trying to find out and track how long the steps do take you, so that you will see right away if things are taking longer than you planned. So you might start out the project with the first step you're going to do and just make an assumption of how long that step will take. And write down how long you think it's going to take. As you complete it, write how long it actually took. And what I'm talking about here is the time that you actually worked on it. So I'm not saying you'll think you'll get something done in one day, but it takes 3 days because somebody gave you a whole lot of other work to do in between. I'm talking about the actual time it takes of you working on it. So let's say that there's a step that you think will take, I'll just say an hour, to throw out something. It's usually a little bit better for this to try to get accurate and do it in minutes, not just default to an hour. So let's say 60 minutes. You think it'll take 60 minutes. In reality, you worked at it and it took you 3 hours. Three times as long as you thought. So what you would do with that is just make a mental note of that, and say, okay, what does this tell me? Maybe most of my projections now are going to be wrong. Maybe I should multiply a lot of them by three, or at least the similar ones, unless there was some extraordinary circumstance that explained to you why that this thing took so much longer. Now, remember, overwhelm is very emotional. When you start doing this, you're not being emotional, you're being analytical. You're actually thinking in an analytical way and making your mind do that and not panicking. So if something took you three times as long as you thought, instead of panicking, think, okay, is there anything to explain why that happened? Was there any extraordinary circumstance that threw me off? If not, then you might need to accept that you're just wrong on the projection, and then maybe you do need to multiply a lot of those other steps times three. But the good thing about that is now things are going to start to make sense. If things are longer than you think they will, and it's simply because your projection assumption was wrong, you can change that. So you can see how off you were, how wrong you were, and make a number out of that. So things took you three times as long as you thought, or five times as long as you thought, and that's your number. And then for your next assumption, you might want to multiply it times that number and put that as the amount of time you leave in your planner to get it done. And that can be a rough reality for people. So this step is not necessarily an easy one, because a lot of times, especially if you've been chronically late for things or behind or missing deadlines all the time, it might just be that your projections have been wrong. And so that can be a really wonderful thing to say, oh, there's not some weird thing that's wrong with me, why I'm always late, I'm just working on the wrong assumptions. So it can be very enlightening, but also painful. Sometimes people don't want to accept reality. They'd rather think that there's something wrong with them and that if they would only learn how to do it right, it would not take so long. They don't want to think, oh, it actually takes that long to do the step. there's a lot of complexity around this. I call that this whole topic time sense, or having a good sense of time and how time works and how long it takes to do things. And it's not an easy thing to accept sometimes, but it can be very freeing once you do get accurate and make projections about how long things will take that make sense. Suddenly, planning is going to become much easier. Making deadlines is going to make not be mysterious anymore. It'll open up a whole new world if you actually get good at that. So the benefits are in doing that to just develop a more accurate sense of time for your future actions, and then you can adjust it in a realistic way. And finally, consider each step of a large project that you complete a success in itself. Because in a large project, if you're able to only see the success as the final thing, this kind of all or nothing thinking, that can keep you in overwhelm, and that can be hard to be motivating. If there's a project that's going to take a month or longer maybe to get done, so you do want to kind of pat yourself on the back along the way for getting the small actions done. And this is where if you have some kind of visual record or tracking system, it can help because you can check off each action, and that is sort of satisfying to see things getting checked off. If you use a mind map, you could actually check it off or cross off the step on the mind map right there, or create a checklist out of it. Or if this is a kind of a work project, maybe you'd create a status report form that you can keep track of what stages of the project has been done. But just think in things of stages and small action steps. So that dining room that I showed you in the mind map earlier, the decluttering of the dining room, one step is clearing off the table. That's a little victory. The table gets cleared. And on these little victories, if it has to do with anything with clutter, make sure that each little step shows a real visible difference. So now when you walk in the dining room, most of it may still be a mess, but at least your eyes can see that the table was clean. And then the next day, you'll see the sideboard was clean. Little by little, you can have that pleasure of seeing some progress. Because you always want to be able to see progress. And that's the opposite of paralysis and overwhelm. So just to summarize, to break out of overwhelm, recognize those common triggers that bring it on. Identify overwhelm as soon as it descends on you. Don't wait until you're drowning in it. Schedule a time when you'll think through the overwhelming project on paper or on your laptop, but work it out so that you can see it visually. And break down the large project into smaller steps using tools like the mind map or the decision tree. Find the starting point and imagine starting at any spot and working backwards. Maintain your focus just on the small, specific steps. Track your progress by writing down how long each step takes and comparing that to reality, or comparing your guess to reality. And consider each step that you complete a success. Because when you're mindful in this very practical kind of a way, you are, in essence, conquering the overwhelm and changing that paralysis into action. And you're also sort of sneaking up some planning skills on yourself at the same time. So if you do all that, you are planning. And that can be a nice big step to break into planning for people that are not accustomed to planning successfully. So that concludes my part of the presentation on overwhelm. And I think now we're going to take some questions.
Yes, we're ready to take questions. And if you'd like to type in a question, you can do so below the chat room. Don't type them in the chat room. Make sure your questions are about the topic of overwhelm. And we did have, I think you answered a lot of the ones that were already sent in, but one that came up a few different times is, what happens to the people who are already in a state of overwhelm and they have a project or deadline due like tomorrow or tonight and they're not able to do the things that you suggested? What is something, or maybe there's one of the tips in there that you did suggest. What could they do if they're like just shutting down right now and they have something due like tomorrow morning?
Okay. Well, I guess the first question is, what time, how much time do you have available to you to do it? Some people actually do stay up all night. That's not a recommended strategy, but if, you know, be realistic about the amount of time that you actually have to work it. I would say then become clear on what the steps are that you have to do, because there is no way to work on something if you don't know what you're working on. Mm-hmm. So you need to lay out what you need to do know, what are the actions that you would work on? And then try to determine where you're going to start on those actions. If it's not clear that there's one place you have to start, then you could perhaps start anywhere and wait till you hit a wall and, you know, then start, go work backwards and start at the new place. You don't want to sit in paralysis, agonizing. What do I do and where do I start? So start drawing it out in a mind map and you know, start visualizing and guessing anywhere to start and just move forward on it. Of course, ideally, you would have planned it out better, but now here you are. You know, you're in the overwhelm and it's due the next day. So you do real quick kind of planning. And a mind map is a way to do a quick kind of a plan.
Okay,
I think that's about all you can do.
Yep. And what advice do you have for people who are overwhelmed and they're stuck in that all-or-nothing performance or that perfectionism mode?
Oh, perfectionism is so hard. Honestly, as time goes on, I'm starting to think perfectionism causes problems for people more than their ADD does. Because with perfectionism, you can hyper-focus so much I'm getting things perfect, which is probably not the right thing to be focusing on. All right, if you're a perfectionist, well, I guess we're going to go back to identifying your triggers. So I would start with identifying what is likely to send you off into spiraling into perfectionism and have a timer and get to learn to use it. And you might, when you break down your project into steps, assign a certain amount of time that you'll allow yourself to work on a certain part of the project. So maybe you set the timer for halfway through or a quarter of the way through to see, are you really a quarter of the way through? And if you're not, and you know it's because you're just perfecting and agonizing, you've got to stop that and move on. I know it's, you know, easy to say stop that, not as easy to do.
Yep.
But if you practice working fast more. So you might use the timer more for games like Beat the Clock. Let's say you're writing a long report. I mean, gosh, writing is a whole class in itself because you should never edit while you're writing. You should do a rough draft and then go back and edit. But let's say you have a report to write and you break it down into sections, and the sections might even have subsections. And so you give yourself a subsection that you think is going to be about half a page long. And maybe you set the timer for 10 minutes and you say, I have to write the whole sloppy, I use this term sloppy draft, which means just throw the words down on the paper. Don't worry about how they look or how they sound or how they flow until the editing stage, which is a separate stage. So let's say you say, I'm just going to get this thing written in 10 minutes before the timer goes off. So it's sort of a mind game you're playing with yourself. If you allow yourself to play that mind game, you cannot get stuck in the perfectionism because you've sort of defined the perfect thing to do is to get it done before the timer goes off. So it's a different kind of perfectionism. Now, of course, if you're working a writing project in that way, you do have to have planned good time for going back and editing the whole thing. But the editing is where people get stuck in the perfectionism, and you sure don't want to be doing that when you still have the whole paper to write.
Okay, great. Here's another question. What do you do when someone tries to help you, but it creates even more stress and overwhelm for you?
Well, I guess I'd ask them to stop helping. Or if they want to be helpful and there perhaps is a way that they could be helpful, again, this is going to come down to breaking down the project. If you're clear what the steps are of the project, you then might ask yourself, is there any steps of this project that person could do better than I can or that they can at least be helpful in doing? And then you can give them something very specific to do to help, and you can tell them what it is you need from them to do. And if they have trouble doing that, then say, okay, you know, I'm better without your help. I mean, you don't say it in a snippy way, of course. Mm-hmm. You thank them genuinely, but if it's really getting you more tense, I think sometimes people understand that. Or you can kind of use the analogy of you know, sometimes people hate other people cooking in their kitchen because it throws off their rhythm. Use an analogy that they can understand to let them down easy and, you know, and thank them for their attempt to help. But so much of this does come down to identifying what it is, what the stages are of the thing that you have to do. And that one does as well.
Okay, how do you keep yourself from falling back into the bad habits that cause you overwhelm?
Depends what those habits are, but reminder devices can be useful. So sometimes just visual reminders are good enough. I mean, it sort of depends what the habits are and when, where you indulge in them. If there are certain habits you indulge in at home, I'd say a big post-it note in the middle of your bathroom mirror is something you can't miss. Or something that you want to remind yourself first thing when you come into work, you might put a big post-it note smack in the center of the computer screen. But a timer is also a good reminder. If there's something that you fall into while you're working, you can set a timer to go off at intervals that are pretty regular, like every 15 minutes, and then use that to pull your mind back and ask yourself, am I doing the right thing right now, or have I fallen back into the old ways? It's kind of a broad question to answer. It depends on the type of habit.
Yeah. No, but those reminders are good. I think also reminding yourself how beneficial it is for you to keep up with the good habits that are working for you. So I think using reminders on both ends can really be helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to give mental energy to the negative thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like the old thing of don't think of a pink elephant, don't think of a pink elephant. And, of course,
mm-hmm.
all you can think of is a pink elephant.
Yes.
So instead it's more like you should say, think of a giraffe. Think of a lovely giraffe.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here's an interesting question. The person says they don't realize they're overwhelmed until they're already like hours into a project.
Yeah.
Is there anything they can do to kind of help them before they get into that overwhelmed and they're spinning?
Go back to techniques number one and two, I believe it was. So let's see, techniques number one and two. I don't want to like flip all over these slides, but let's see. All right, one. So recognize the triggers that bring on overwhelm. You obviously have a situation in mind, whoever wrote that question, maybe a painful one that's fresh in your mind. What was that situation? What led to your overwhelm? Write that down. That's maybe the kind of thing that triggers your overwhelm. What about that situation made you overwhelmed? Are you likely to encounter something like that again? So now you can anticipate it. Like, was it overwhelming because it was very big or very complicated, or, you know, what exactly led to that?
Okay.
And then the other thing is to get to realize in your body what it feels like before you're drowning in it.
Mm. So paying attention to your body, it can
yeah.
be very helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. It would be good to identify it before you feel it. Sorry, I have a tickle in my throat here. Good to identify it before you feel it, but as soon as you do recognize it, ask yourself, how do I know? Like, what does it feel like?
Mm-hmm.
And then try to become more sensitive to that feeling earlier.
Okay. Our next question, I'm sure, is a very popular one. How do you make yourself stay with a project?
Well, don't tax your attention span.
Mm.
So if you're trying to say, I should be working on this for 3 hours, but I'm, you know, my brain drifts off to lunch after 20 minutes, then
yep.
divide the darn thing into 20-minute intervals
yeah.
and, you know, break it up with variety. Discipline does not work on an ADD brain, as I think everybody knows, you know. You can force yourself to sit in your seat, but you cannot force your mind to focus when it stops.
Mm. Yeah.
So get a good sense of what your attention span is able to do well, and then deliberately plan your day that way so it might be more variety and mm-hmm. not too long on one thing. But this is a situation where a timer that goes off automatically at intervals can help, because you can check in with your mind and say, is my mind on what I'm doing, or is my mind wandered? So that way you get a sense of your own attention span and it'll be different from one task to another. It'll be very much longer probably if you enjoy what you're doing than on something that you don't enjoy.
Yeah. And I think that's great that you brought up the fact that, you know, if you get distracted every 20 minutes, maybe you work well in 20-minute bursts.
Yeah.
And, you know, so plan to work at 20 minutes at a time and then have a plan to transition back, take the
uh-huh.
break, make sure you come back instead of because after 20 minutes or whatever the time is, you're just going to go to the internet and you're going to take that break you need anyway. So if you plan it and then plan time to come back, it can make you a lot more productive than you realize.
Absolutely. If you're trying to force your brain beyond its attention span, you're kidding yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because your brain really is not there. That's how people make a lot of careless errors, that they're,
yeah.
you know, trying to think, okay, I'm forcing myself to do this. Oh, I'm so good. I'm so disciplined. But
mm-hmm.
they make a lot of mistakes that way.
Okay. How do you stay calm when you just don't have a clue on how to get organized and you're just so overwhelmed?
Well, that kind of covers the topic, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so this sounds like an individual who goes into kind of a panic mode rather than the blank wall mode. I don't know if you know your brain is going, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a panicking type of person, probably some deep breathing would help a little bit. You do need to calm down the brain from the oh, my God, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
I would take out the pencil and take out the paper and start mind mapping what the steps are.
Mm-hmm.
Mind mapping is a very creative activity. It captures everything. You'll end up with a plan. Well, not exactly a plan, but you'll end up with, let's say, a roadmap of all the steps involved. And incidentally, I went through mind mapping, of course, pretty fast. I give a whole class on mind mapping. You can find explanations of mind mapping all over the Internet as well, or YouTube, or you know, any of the stuff that I've mentioned that you want a little more instruction on, easy to find online. But you know, come out with that with the mind map. Then you'll come up with something useful as a structure of the steps involved of what you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go back to start anywhere. Start with any one of the branches of the mind map and say, okay, can I start here? If you can't, then you've identified what has to be done first. Try starting back at that point. So essentially, all of the techniques I talked about will help you with that. But first, you have to calm down the brain and get out of the panic and just take a deep breath and say, okay, moment for the next, I don't know, mind maps don't take real long. You know, for the next half an hour, most, I'm going to make a mind map
mm-hmm.
of the project.
And it's funny, even the people, some people just don't do well with mind maps. Sometimes just sitting down and making a simple list, like I know myself, my brain is so disorganized. Sometimes just sitting down and making a list of like five items can like really help my brain.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, sometimes it's just that simple of writing it down. I mean, mind maps are great for the people who they work for. They, you know, say they're great. There are some of us that mind maps don't work for. So if someone's saying, okay, I can't do a mind map, you know, maybe just simply jot a couple things down on a piece of paper or something.
Yeah, if there are a few.
Yeah.
A few.
No, yeah.
Long lists do nothing
yeah.
but
panic, yeah, could overwhelm you even more.
Long lists are very useless. But
yeah.
And mind maps are not useful, really, if you have a lot of different things to do.
Yes. So
mind maps are more useful for one project, figuring out how to get through one project.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, one thing that it goes together with.
What do you suggest for someone who says that they don't have time to do what they're supposed to do? How can they have time to prioritize and plan?
Well, one reason they don't have time to do what they're supposed to do is they don't have a plan and they have no priorities.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably have an unrealistic amount of things that they've sort of told themselves with magical thinking they can get done.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very much a fallacy, but we do get stuck in it. When you're panicking, it's sort of like when a person is drowning and someone tries to save them, they're in great danger of being drowned by the drowning person who is so panicked
mm-hmm.
that they, you know, push the person under. You're kind of doing that to yourself when you're so caught up in too much to do that you say, I have no time to plan. It's sort of like, I have no time to breathe. I have no time to get calm. Okay, then you're going to get stuck in the same situation that you're in. Because you're basically saying, I have no time to get out of the situation. So you've got to do something to break out of the situation or there will be no end to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fallacy to believe you don't have time to plan, but it's understandable if you're not at all accustomed to planning. It seems like a useless thing to do and also an extremely time-consuming thing to do. Once you become more comfortable with the concept of planning and you see that planning actually allows you to get the stuff done, and you learn how to plan. And there's a lot of components, though, of learning how to plan. But once you learn to do that, you won't have that kind of thinking anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So to start, at the very least, as you work your way through all the stuff you're doing, just take 1 second and say, you know, write down a number. How many minutes is this going to take me? And write down how many minutes you think it's going to take you. And look at your watch and write down what time you start and write down what time you stopped. And maybe afterward, at the end of the day, do the calculations, how many minutes it really took, and then compare it to your guess. Because you're going to see pretty rapidly, if your guesses are completely unrealistic, that everything you're doing is never going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I look at people's to-do lists, and they'll, you know, say quite seriously, okay, these are all the things I have to do today. And you just see it. There's no way you're going to get that all that done today. Maybe you'd get a third of it if you're lucky. And, you know, it's a person who has no idea how long things really, really take. And until you get that idea, you're just going to be stuck. And that's probably the most critical of all the techniques, incidentally.
Okay, great. Now, can you talk a bit about, you know, the distractions that people will end up doing or going to when they are overwhelmed, like the internet or just going to get a snack and not getting back? Would planning or prioritizing beforehand help with these?
Not necessarily, except okay. The one we talked about before, which is honor your attention span and plan to take a break.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know that what you need to get up to do to take a break is, you know, maybe get up and get coffee, get a glass of water, walk around, whatever you need to do, you can incorporate that deliberately into a productive day.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the key, maybe you said there, and I don't know if that was in the sentence, was in the question itself, was, and you forget to get back.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do that, it needs to be deliberate. If you're going to get a cup of coffee, you've got to decide, are you going straight to the coffee room and then back again?
Yep.
Or are you going to wander the halls?
So maybe giving yourself permission sometimes to do these things, like maybe giving yourself permission to be on the internet for 50 minutes, setting the timer because you're going to end up on there anyways, and you'll be on there for 2 hours instead of 15 minutes.
Well, that's the thing. Some people get so sucked into the internet that it's not a good break activity.
Yeah. Okay.
On the other hand, a lot of people have to work online, so they really can't avoid the internet.
Yeah.
So I call it being intentional. Make an intention. So your intention might be to give yourself 15 minutes to do whatever you please online, but you should probably set a timer to give yourself the transitional warning when it's almost time to come back, and then the final when you must come back.
Okay, great. And Bonnie, we have a few minutes left. Is there anything else that you'd like to share that you didn't share tonight? And could you also give people your contact information?
I would certainly do that. What I'd like to show them, famous last words. Overwhelm is very, 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 very common. It's very natural. People don't talk about it a lot except here amongst ourselves in the ADD community. But I think you don't hear the word overwhelm quite as much among other people. So you may have the feeling that everyone else has it all together and you're the only one that gets overwhelmed. I doubt it. I think a lot of people get overwhelmed. They just have found different ways to cope with it and to not show it as much. And the coping things, I gave you 8 of them. Don't try all 8 at once. Pick one or two that you relate to start with. Or pick the ones that will be the most meaningful to you. If you're giving yourself a ridiculous number of things that you think you can get done during the day, start with the one about the sense of time. But seriously, give yourself a break. It's very normal and natural to feel overwhelmed, and you can still be extremely productive despite a tendency to overwhelm by learning how to just break through it, because that's what we're talking about here. My contact information, well, first of all, my website is thrivewithadd.com. You can email me, bonnie@bonnieminku.com, and I should put up that last slide. I can get to the last slide. All right. Little button isn't cooperating with me. There we go. Okay.
There we go. Good.
And you can also call me, though not late at night, 914-478-0071. I don't have that on the slide. And there's a couple of programs that I do. One of them that I just finished is a 12-week program called ADHD Productivity Engine. So if you choose, you can read about that and some of the other ones. But I have a lot of classes and programs, and we talk about these things, and they're all very interrelated, time sense, mind mapping, overwhelm. So it's hard to isolate them. Overwhelm is one that pulls a lot of different things together, and the solutions pull a lot of different things together.
Okay, great. I want to thank you for an excellent teleseminar tonight, Bonnie, and I would like to thank everybody for listening to this addclasses.com teleseminar, and have a great night, everyone. Thanks again, Bonnie.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful night. Bye-bye.